The Gyroplane Safety Debate. Why are there no LSA gyros yet? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. I'm sitting here in Mentone, Indiana at the PRA National Convention, International Convention, with Greg Grimminger, who, in addition to being the U.S. distributor for Magni Gyroplanes, is also leading the ASTM committee for LSA Gyroplanes. Greg, thanks for coming, thanks for bringing your gyroplane, and thanks for making some time with us.
Sure thing, Paul. There's probably, I've heard this a couple times just recently, there's some confusion about the SLSA gyroplanes and the consensus standard. There actually are accepted consensus standards for the gyroplanes. They were approved 3 or 4 years ago by the ASTM process, and they were accepted by the FAA. Those include the design and performance standard, the quality assurance standard, and the continued airworthiness monitoring standard. Those are approved and on the record accepted ASTM standards for gyroplanes. That doesn't mean that we can have SLSA gyroplanes or even ELSA gyroplanes, because that's a completely different subject. If we were allowed to have SLSA gyroplanes, we would then those gyroplanes would then need to meet the ASTM standards. There are ASTM standards for those, so that part of it is ready. Where we're not ready is where the FAA is not ready to grant us SLSA gyroplanes and have formulated a process by which gyroplanes can eventually achieve SLSA gyroplanes, but we're in the process of working through what the FAA has required. In the release of the light sport pilot rules, the FAA outlined, first of all, that they did not believe that the gyroplane community could reach consensus, develop consensus standards for gyroplanes. We did. They were wrong about that. They secondly would not allow gyroplanes to be sold as SLSA, which means fully factory built, like the trikes and airplanes and powered parachutes are. The reason for that was likely just internal FAA politics. The trikes, the powered parachutes, the airplanes all fell under the jurisdiction of the light airplane directorate. Rotorcraft fell under the Rotorcraft Directorate, which is a completely different entity, which is mostly familiar and promoting of helicopters. Mm-hmm. Gyroplanes are not a favorite of that directorate. That directorate early on expressed the opinion that they did not agree with what the FAA was doing with light sport and sport pilot, that they would not allow gyroplanes to be in it, and they had the jurisdiction, even though the folks in Washington and elsewhere in light sport wanted to get gyroplanes approved for SLSA. The final call was the Rotorcraft Directorate, and they shot it down.
Okay, now, to some extent, this is very frustrating because the FAA is actually coming around to being the log on the tracks in terms of improving safety, because if there was a wider acceptance of the ASTM or the industry consensus standards, and there were gyroplanes being factory built which met, which had a wide safety envelope, then stats would clean up, things would get safer, and market pressures would bring everybody else around.
That's exactly the original reason that we developed the ASTM standards for gyroplanes, even though they were not necessary because they weren't going to allow SLSA gyroplanes. So the ASTM standards were not legally regulatory required for anything, but we developed them in concurrence with the FAA to try to influence the industry, the builders, the designers, the purchasers, the flyers, into understanding what can make gyroplanes safer and then more acceptable to the aviation community. The FAA has given us a method to achieve SLSA, but that method first requires that we collect data on compliant gyroplanes. By compliant gyroplanes means gyroplanes that meet the ASTM standard. Mm-hmm. The problem with that, and recognized by the original sport pilot FAA people, was that no manufacturer without the ability to compete in the fully built market, like airplanes and trikes and powered parachutes, without that ability was going to make the major investments that it took to meet the ASTM standards. Those major investments are not just designing and having the aircraft perform as it should, but those were quality assurance and continued airworthiness monitoring, basically paperwork and bureaucratic things in those factories, in the producers' factories. So the FAA had required that we collect data on compliant gyroplanes, but there was no means to get compliant gyroplanes out there. And an experimental gyroplane cannot be compliant by its name. No manufacturer is going to declare a gyroplane that you built as compliant with the standard. They can't control it in experimental. That's why an experimental amateur built. That's why originally the FAA had encouraged us to seek petitions for exemptions to the SLSA rules that would allow the factories, if they were granted those exemptions, to build fully built, factory ready to fly ELSA, experimental light sport aircraft. And the requirement of those aircraft was that because they were factory built, the factory had to declare them and prove that they were compliant to the standards. Mm-hmm. That's the stumbling block that the FAA has been holding us up on. They are apparently, some in the FAA don't understand the initial requirement for compliant gyroplane data and why it's necessary to grant an exemption to get that data. Mm-hmm. We hope we've made some contacts now within the FAA that may change that perception. A major thing that may be going our way is the Rotorcraft Directorate, who has been, I said, resistant to gyroplanes all along, has a new director. That director, as of I think it was August 1st, is taken over that job. This is a lady, Kimberly Smith, that is, we understand, is friendly to gyroplanes. She's a rotorcraft helicopter pilot, airplane pilot. She was the director of the manager of the small airplane directorate, and she's taken over the new job of director of the rotorcraft directorate. And although she's going into territory where the department probably isn't very friendly to gyroplanes, she, I believe, is making a commitment that she's going to try to help gyroplanes. I met with her at Oshkosh a week ago, and I was encouraged by her interest in what we were trying to do and her understanding of why it hasn't happened yet. And she has told me she wants to try to make that happen now.
More in a moment with Greg Grimminger. In Mentone, I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This AeroCast segment is sponsored by ForeFlight, makers of ForeFlight Mobile HD, the elegantly designed iPad and iPhone app for pilots. Learn more about ForeFlight's new touch-based flight planning capability. Build complex flight plans and bend routes around weather in just seconds using only your fingers. With HD NEXRAD, VFR and IFR charts, terminal procedures, a comprehensive AFD, and now touch planning. Visit us online at www.foreflight.com. ForeFlight. Intelligent apps for pilots.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and no ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamond.com. Air.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. Today, you're hearing my conversation with Greg Grimminger. on the stalled process of getting gyroplanes approved as light sport aircraft in the U.S. Let's talk about the one remaining issue in this discussion, and that is the divisions within the gyroplane community, which are self-sabotaging this whole process. There's arguments going on about what makes a gyroplane stable, and there is a readily available, simple, inexpensive test to do, and yet everybody wants to argue about design on paper rather than just going out and doing the tests and finding out what works in the real world. To what extent is that holding this whole train up?
I think that internal argument, which is very public and has been public for years, starting back when a Canadian unnamed company was really pushing the Rotorcraft Directorate for approvals or some approvals for their factory because they were building the most quality gyroplane and they were selling the most gyroplanes. And they were pressing the Rotorcraft Directorate about why their gyroplanes are so safe, or really why their gyroplanes are having so many accidents and it wasn't the gyroplane's fault. I truly believe that those people, the Rotorcraft Directorate, saw right through all those arguments and considered the rotorcraft gyroplane community as shade tree engineers that did not know what they're talking about. That's why they formally said in the rule when they released the sport pilot rule that they did not believe the community could come together and develop a consensus standard because they were being exposed to so many, and they watch the forums and they read the magazines and they see the discourse. They were convinced that there was not the expertise or the cooperation within the gyroplane community that could make gyroplanes safer. And essentially, they told us we don't want to be involved with it because we don't think you can do it safer. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the reasons that they backed out of the SLSA. That continues to hurt us. They watch us. They watch the arguing. They watch the shade tree engineering. By shade tree engineering, I consider that all the emphasis on purely on a horizontal stabilizer, or purely on a propeller thrust line, or purely on some thingamajig that it ought to have. When they see that, they're smarter people than that. They know that we don't know what we're talking about, and we need to stop that public arguing unless you really know what you're talking about. Now, it's always fun to talk thrust lines and horizontal stabilizers and airframe inertias and moments of inertia. It's always fun to talk that if you're capable of talking like that. Most people ignore those subjects because it's over their head and they'll water it down to something simple. Well, that one looks like it's got a high thrust line, so that one is dangerous. Mm-hmm. And that is a completely misleading presumption. You don't know if a gyroplane is flight stability safe or not safe until you do flight stability testing. Mm-hmm. And what you were getting around to is that testing is just super simple to do. That testing does not necessarily, when you perform a flight test stability testing on a gyroplane or any aircraft, it doesn't necessarily say, oh, that one's unstable and that one's stable. That isn't the case. Probably any aircraft and all gyroplanes have a speed and power envelope within which they are stable and safe. They would meet the ASTM criteria for flight stability. However, when you push power or airspeed or some combination of power and airspeed to the extreme limits, that can change that stability characteristic, and it may be outside of its safe flight envelope. I believe the problem with gyroplane safety is that very few have been concerned about identifying the flight safety envelope. Testing it at full power and high speed and low power and high speed and low speed and full power, those kinds of tests will help identify what combination of power and airspeed are outside the safe stability limits. Mm-hmm. The ASTM standard is intended, its criteria does not have anything in its requirements about how big of a horizontal stabilizer or how high of a thrust line or how small of a windshield or any of those characteristics that everybody likes to talk about. Well, mine's safer because it's painted green. Those are criteria that the FAA laughs at us when they see us arguing those. They laugh at us and are not encouraged by us when they see us arguing propeller thrust lines and horizontal stabilizers this big or this far back, and without taking the whole thing into account. The ASTM standards were designed to be non-prescriptive. That means they don't tell you how to solve a problem. They tell you how to identify if it's got a problem.
Right.
And when you determine where and when it's got a problem, that's what essentially will set your VNE, for instance, or your safe operating envelope. No aircraft standard prescribes that you have to have a horizontal stabilizer even. Most of us understand that unless some newer strange technology comes along, you're not going to get there without one. Mm-hmm. But how good it needs to be, or how big, or how far back, or what propeller thrust line it will accommodate, or what drag lines it will accommodate, how big a sloping windshield it will accommodate, no engineer can write a formula that puts all of those prescriptive characteristics together to say, okay, work out this long formula and that one's safe, or this one's not safe, or that one's safe up to 80 miles an hour and this one's not safe above 80 miles an hour. There's no engineer can do that. You have to do flight testing. Even the biggest aeronautical companies, which have the high-powered computers working with them on aerodynamics that is probably better understood than gyroplane rotors and airframes, they still do flight testing to verify that their computer programs worked out. It's to the FAA, when we publicly argue, focus on, say, propeller thrust lines or horizontal stabilizers, and that's the pure focus, I believe the FAA just thinks we're showing our ignorance, and we cannot afford to keep showing our ignorance if we want them to work with us and help promote safety in our community.
Well, thanks for taking some time out to enlighten our listeners on that, and we wish you all the best in dealing with the roadblocks.
Thank you.
Greg Greminger is the chairman of the ASTM Committee for Gyroplane Industry Consensus Standards. Reach him with comments through the Magni Gyro USA website at magnigyro.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.